Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All. Less work, more clean. Terms apply.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Single Tracks Podcast. My name is Jeff, and today my guest is Matt Harvey. Matt is the co-founder of Enduro Bearings, a company dedicated to producing premium, high-quality bearings for the bicycle industry. He's been working in bike shops, starting as a teenager and later for industry brands like Gary Fisher and Bianchi. Thanks for joining me, Matt.
Hey, thanks for having me, Jeff. Appreciate it.
So what was sort of your aha moment for forming Enduro Bearings?
Yeah, that's a good question. I guess because I was in the bicycle industry, and of course, you're encountering bearings all the time. It wasn't like I was thinking about them that much. But my the guy that I grew up with and worked in bike shops for a long time started making them in his machine shop, but not for bicycles, for forklifts in the early 1990s. And I was helping him with drawings for those. So, so I went from, drawing some frames and things like that at Bianchi to drawing ball bearings, which are all circles, but they're complicated circles. And, mostly we were copying some designs that were made before, but he was making these rollers for forklifts that you just turn on the lathe. And so that's how it kind of started. And at the same time, I'd been working at Fisher for a while on one of the first full suspension bikes, and there we were using bushings at the time in the in the bike, but bearings we found react faster. They move faster with high frequency bumps and so forth. So we were trying to put bearings in those bikes, and so those two things kind of came together at once, and that's how I got into thinking more about bearings and then looking at their design.
Yeah, interesting. Well, yeah, I read on your website that Enduro Bearings was founded in like 96, so like mid to late 90s. Has the company always been called Enduro? Like, I don't feel like that term was really used in mountain biking until after that, at least.
You know, it's funny because, there was Enduro motorcycles, and that's Enduro kind of indicates long lasting. And so my business partner actually came up with the name Enduro at the time, but it wasn't a moniker for a type of bike riding at the time. It was, it was just, something we thought of, while we were sitting down having a beer, as I recall.
Interesting. Well, that's interesting that it wasn't necessarily intentional, but it worked out. And obviously that's like in mountain biking, that scene is like a more aggressive form of riding where obviously, you're going to want something that's dependable and high performance. And it's a great name.
Yeah. I mean, to that point, it started after that, there was all of a sudden the sector of Enduro, and then a lot of products became called Enduro. So we had to, it was not a common term in bicycles at all at the time.
Yeah, interesting. So tell us, what makes bike bearings different from bearings that are used for other purposes?
Well, so most of the bearings that are used in bicycles are sizes that have existed for years and years, but they're usually for high speed applications and low load, small loads.
Okay.
For instance, the most common size in a bicycle is called a 6902, about a half inch internal diameter, a little more than an inch outer diameter. So that bearing in industry is used all over the place, but it's usually spinning at 10,000 RPM. It's in a motor, in lot of motors or and printers for large printers and all sorts of sewing machine duties, all sorts of duties that where it's spinning 10, 20,000 RPM at, with very low loads. So in the bicycle industry, the same bearing spins at maybe 200 RPM, you know, at the most, usually in a hub or something, but the loads are much higher given the size of the bearing.
Okay.
So it's same size, but very different application.
Yeah. Interesting. So what are the challenges involved in designing a high performance bearing, especially for bikes, if we are doing higher loads, but lower speeds?
So that designation, let's stick with that for a second, 6902, that can have three different ball sizes inside of it. Even though it's 12 by 28 millimeters, it can be seen with different size balls and different quantity of balls inside. And that affects the load rating and the capacity, and then how fast you want to turn it. So for high speed application, people will often use smaller balls with shallower grooves because it can make, it'll make less noise and it'll still hold the load. Whereas in a bicycle, what we do is we make it with as large of balls as possible and as deep of grooves for the races that support the ball. Because the ball's rolling around in this ball cup that the ball rolls in on the inner and outer diameter. And the grooves of that cup or the height of them could be shallow or deep. When it's going really fast, they can be shallow because you have less noise, you have less surface area contact, and so, and less heat because as a bearing goes really fast, you have heat considerations too. But for a bicycle, it never gets hot. It's just rolling at a lower RPM. So you need more support for the ball, more surface area contact to resist the loads. And let's say a suspension bike or in a hub where hubs get pulled side to side, you have a disc brake pulling on one side. You have the torque of the chain on the other side.
Yeah. Interesting. And pivot bearings in particular seem a lot different because they don't, I mean, they don't come close to even one full rotation, right? They're just kind of like rocking back and forth. So is that, does that mean that you would design that differently in terms of like how it works and what it needs to be optimized for?
Yeah. And so back to the 90s when we started, that was one of the first designs I did that I saw in forklift bearings. And forklift bearings, they're larger sizes, of course, but similar application. They're these rollers that have to support all the weight of the mast and they go up and down. And they're not rotating very much, but they support huge loads. So they're full of balls. Usually these bearings we're talking about, they have like spacers in between the balls, a retainer that holds the balls. And so we came up with max type balls where you you have to design it so that you can fill it full of balls, but there's no space in between the balls essentially. And it supports load by about 50% better. And like you said, in pivot bearings, you're not rotating even 360 degrees. You're actually only rotating 7 to 20 degrees on a pivot bearing.
Very little.
So it's just going back and forth, but you want maximum load carrying capacity. And in that case, you just want as many balls as possible and large ones at that.
Yeah. So with a lot of bike stuff, I know the design is often dictated by weight considerations. Is that something you think about with bike bearings? I mean, obviously it's a small part, but I made a list of like all the parts on a bike that have bearings and it adds up. There's like a lot of, of different bearings. So yeah, is weight something you think about?
Because pivot bearings, like you just said, you know, oftentimes you have 8 pivot bearings. Some bikes have up to 16 pivot bearings. So that adds up, you know, and some of them, you know, the most simple designs have two, two big, but you, if you're supporting all the weight on just two bearings, obviously those have to be a little larger. So yeah, weight is always a consideration. And I, you know, usually the design is coming from the frame builders. So if they're asking me about, if we're working together, then, you know, we're talking about weight, we're talking about load capacity, axial load capacity. Is this thing in a plate, in a rocker, where it's getting any twisting action, or is it just pure radial load? So depending on where it is in the rocker linkage too, can dictate what kind of design or you're going to go for that bearing.
Yeah. Interesting. So which parts on a mountain bike are going to benefit the most from high quality bearings? I feel like something that's going to be spinning a lot maybe is, but is it in fact something more like a suspension pivot that's going to benefit more?
Well, suspension pivots are really important if you don't want to have to knock your bike apart all the time and replace them all, because it's not fun to replace 16 bearings usually on a bike.
Yeah.
But, you know, when people ask me, like, what are the most essential places for bearings on a bike, I usually start with the bottom bracket, which is gets the most punishment. It's low.
Yeah.
It gets all the mud, the dirt, the salt water, whatever is on the road is getting thrown directly at it. And it's where your power starts. There's a lot of, you know, it's where the transmission starts from your legs into the drivetrain. And, and so the loads are not just straight on radial loads. They're all over the place because we pedal out of the saddle and so forth. And then the bearings directly behind the bottom bracket on a pivot bike are get a lot of that same action. So a low pivot behind the bottom bracket or around the bottom bracket gets similar punishment. So those two spots low on the bike are usually the ones where you would want to spend the most time with the best design, sealing them, all the considerations to make them last a long time.
Yeah. So, it sounds like in terms of durability, those are the spots to think about. What about like in terms of just the action, I guess, for lack of a better term, of the bearing, like low friction, like something that's going to be very smooth and I mean, is that a consideration? Like, can you measure that and say like this bearing is more efficient than another one? And if so, like where do we want those really efficient ones?
Yeah, you can. And we actually do measure, you know, wattage drag of bearings and so forth. Fortunately, all of the bearings are extremely efficient new out of the box when you put them in. A bearing is a really efficient little machine. They only drag, the drag on most bearings is around a quarter watt when you put it out of the box. But if you're, it starts getting filled with dirt or wears out, starts galling or pitting, or the metal starts to deteriorate. Usually corrosion starts all that 90% of the time. Then the wattage pull or soak of the bearing goes up. It becomes less efficient. And you hear it. It's like the creaking, the noise, you know, it gets loose.
Yeah.
So the efficiency goes way down. And other things are affected, like when it gets loose, you know, your suspension linkage is going side to side.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it, all while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Side more wagging. So you're losing efficiencies there too. So the big considerations are keeping it clean. So good seals, good grease inside to begin with, and a lot of it as much as possible, and good steel, really just good materials. If you start out with lousy steel, you're going to have a lousy outcome of performance. It's not going to last very long.
Okay. Interesting.
So yeah, it's like ingredients. The first part is good steel balls, which we source ours from Japan, all the balls, and the steel coming from good foundries. That's where we have a little advantage, I'd say, to a lot of bike makers, because we're able, because of our industrial side of our business, we're able to buy a lot of steel because the forklift bearings are much larger. We buy a lot of steel, so we're able to buy from bigger foundries because it's all by weight.
Right. Interesting. Yeah. So you mentioned once bearings start wearing out, you're going to, a lot of times you're going to hear something. You're going to hear creaking or some kind of friction noise. Like, is that the best way to know that your bearings need maintenance, or are there like ways to tell visually, or what's sort of the best way to know when you need to do something?
Yeah. Actually, it's usually like bearings don't creak. Actually, the bearings usually creak in some kind of, you know, they start creaking inside of a cup or some aluminum piece is fretting against it. So it could be that if the bearing gets loose, because if it gets loose, then the fit up parts that are with it start to chatter and move against the steel.
Okay.
So when you have aluminum on steel, that's where you'll get a creak. But usually bearings, you'll start to hear a crunch or a pop or it's kind of usually a more of a startling noise than a creak.
Okay. Yeah.
And, but for instance on, or things get loose and you can't tighten it anymore, or if it has a preload adjustment, like a bottom bracket, you tighten it and then it gets loose on the next ride. Probably the bearing is, the balls are, have worn into the race.
Okay.
And you can't really adjust the load. It's just, wearing out in there.
Yeah. Yeah. Are there like preventative things or things you can do to catch it before it gets to that point? Or is it usually, I mean, is that okay? Is that normal to just kind of run it until it starts giving you problems?
Well, when the metal starts wearing out fast like that, it's usually because it's steel on steel contact or ceramic on steel contact and there's no more grease. So yeah, you can prevent that by, if you ride in the rain for several hours and everything's gotten washed out, you might want to look at opening up some things and putting some grease back in there, taking the seals off. And you don't necessarily have to take the bearings completely out and wash them, but just getting grease back inside will coat the ball against the race. And that prevents that long time wear that I was just describing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, you know, usually people ask me like, how often should I grease a bike? Well, it depends on how much you ride, of course, and and how much in the, you ride in the rain. But for someone who rides quite a bit, I'd say once a year and pivots on a mountain bike, probably get some grease in there once a year if you ride a lot. And if you don't ride a lot, maybe once every 2 years.
Okay.
You know, you'd be all right.
Yeah. Well, so beyond like adding grease to your bearings, are bearings somewhat serviceable? Like for a home mechanic, like would you ever get down into the weeds of like replacing balls or like you said, I think you suggested like some people maybe would take them out and clean them and put them back in. Like, is that worthwhile for the home mechanic, or is that like a better bike shop job, or is it better to just buy a whole new bearing when you get to that point?
I mean, people do it all the time. I do it because I'm interested and I get in there and it takes some time. Sometimes the it's cheaper just to take all the bearing, like on a suspension bike, you know, you knock them all out and put in a whole new set. But you can definitely service bearings like that. You take them out, you have to take the seals off and clean them out in a bath, you know, maybe like a hydrosonic cleaner or something, you know, just to...
Which a lot of people don't have.
No, exactly. And, but, you know, surprisingly, a lot of people do because they're cleaning their chains and waxing chains and doing things like that these days. Mm-hmm. So they may have that cleaner bath, and you clean them out and then you put them all back together. But it's quite a bit of work. You know, it's going to be mm-hmm. compared to it might double the length of, let's say you're doing the whole, all the pivots on a suspension bike. I don't know, let's say it takes you an hour and a half to do the whole thing, or an hour, it might double the time to do it.
Yeah.
But if you have the time, it's definitely, and the bearings are still all right. Yeah. It's fine to do that, to clean them all out and re-grease them and put them back in.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm thinking too, though, a few bike brands have these like lifetime pivot bearings on their frames. And so mm-hmm. I guess for some consumers, that kind of makes it sound like this is like a disposable thing, right? Like you run it until you just mm-hmm. replace them and they're free or they're cheap or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, you can also, obviously they're serviceable, and that's something that people should consider, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, I'm towards the side of being less wasteful. You know, a lot of people tell me, I just buy less expensive bottom brackets because I just throw it away and put a new one in. Mm-hmm. But it's nice to be able to take something apart, I think, you know, re-grease it, clean it out, re-grease it, and put it back in there and let it run for another 6 months or a year rather than just throw it in the landfill.
Yeah, for sure. So you mentioned that greasing bearings regularly is important. What kind of grease should people use for bearings? Like, are there different weights and types that you're going to use depending where the bearing is or the size? Or like, how do you know what the right type of grease is to use?
That's a good question. There's a lot of really good greases out there. We use some major industrial brand greases that, like Mobil, in a lot of our extra high pressure grease. So there's a lot of really good bike greases out there too. I like thicker, sticky greases, mm-hmm. especially for pivot bearings. We use this stuff called Almaguard that we also sell that you can get for Max type bearings,
okay.
because it's what they call an extra high pressure grease. Mm. And what does that mean? It means that it's really difficult once it's on the bearing to get pushed aside. Hmm. So greases can actually, when the ball is on the race, it can push the grease aside and then you have metal on metal contact.
Okay.
So extra high pressure means that even though there's a super high pressure between the ball and the race, mm-hmm. there's still a grease barrier between the two metal parts. Hmm. So a thick, sticky grease in pivots, because it's not spinning as we were talking about earlier, it's just mm-hmm. rocking yeah. back and forth 7 degrees. So in that application, you want very thick and sticky grease that's not going to wash out and that's going to maintain that barrier between the ball and the race. For hubs, people like them to spin better, so you can go with a little bit lighter, faster spinning grease.
Okay.
Again, it's not going to really slow you down if you put that thick stuff in there, but people like their wheels to spin really well. I do too. So,
yeah.
You know, you can go with a quote unquote faster grease. I still prefer greases that are good against water washout, waterproof synthetic greases that, mm-hmm. and as I said, there's a lot of good brands out there on the market. We use three distinctive greases in our bearings. So one for Max bearings and headset bearings, mm-hmm. where you have high impact loads between the ball and the race. Uh-huh. It's that Almaguard grease that's very extra high super extra high pressure, I think they call it. And then we use Mobil extra high pressure in hubs because
okay.
it spins well and it hangs in there and it's also good for impact. And then we use Kluber at the top end, Kluber Isoflex, which is a very fast grease. It's also very expensive mm-hmm. for ceramic and stainless steel bearings. We use that because people at that level, they're looking at performance and they want less stiction of their grease.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. And you mentioned the grease for hubs. And I know for hubs in particular, that can really change. Like some hubs are real buzzy and noisy. And if you put, what is it? You put a certain kind of grease or like extra grease and it'll quiet it down?
Well, there's, yeah, like a lot of the hub makers have a special grease just for the Paul mechanism.
Okay.
Which, I mean, that grease will work well anywhere, but I believe that's not an area I studied as much, but I've used it myself. And what I think is happening, it does quiet your Paul mechanism down. Mm-hmm. I think it's also a high pressure grease because it's basically a barrier between the two metal parts. So you don't get that sonic, as high a sonic noise out of the hub.
Right. Yeah. That makes sense.
At those points.
Yeah. So you mentioned just now the ceramic ball bearings. What's the advantage of using ceramic for your bearing balls?
Well, so with ceramic balls, there is, it's a very small number, but there is less friction between the ball and race because the ball is 7 times harder than a steel ball. A steel ball can flex slightly. You don't really see it or wouldn't notice it, but on a micro level, the ball flexes slightly and it works really well. Steel on steel, they flex together, if you will, the ball and the race. But you know, any movement like that cuts down slightly on efficiency. A ceramic ball is extremely hard and will just roll. You know, it's not going to flex at all. It's almost like a rock. You can think of it that way. So, but the challenge with a ceramic ball on a steel race is that it can wear out the steel race much quicker, especially if there's no grease. Once the grease is gone, usually on bearing steel, it's just a matter of short time before it'll be worn out. We have a steel that we use called the XD15, where this doesn't happen. The steel was actually engineered to use ceramic balls. It was developed for Airbus for control bearings in the wings. And you can actually run an XD15 ceramic bearing without grease. You don't need any.
Oh, wow.
But it's the makeup of the steel. It's hardened with nitrogen instead of carbon. And on a micro level, because of this attribute, it won't wear out against a ceramic ball. It'll actually polish it as it goes around.
Wow!
So it's a little different animal. Of course, it is more expensive. But if you like ceramic bearings and you want that edge of you can run these things with no maintenance, but you know, it costs more. So there's always trade-offs and compromises with all these things. But back to your question on ceramic hybrids with chromium steel, which chromium steel is 90-something% of the bearings that we see that in the market.
Okay.
They call it bearing steel. Sometimes it's a high chromium steel. When you have ceramic balls with those, you have to keep up with greasing and maintenance in order to have them last a long time.
Okay. Yeah. That's good to know. Cause I think a lot of people just think, oh, I'll spend more on this, you know, it's better. And so I don't have to think about it as much, but yeah, it sounds like you actually do need to really keep on top of that if you do go with ceramic bearings.
Yeah. It's more important than steel, all steel bearings to keep the grease in there and to keep them clean.
Right.
Frankly.
Yeah. So where are most bearings produced? You said that that the balls, a lot of the balls that you use come from Japan. Mm-hmm. Are you sourcing like all the parts and machining parts in different places and then assembling them? Or is this kind of all done in one location?
No, it's several locations because we make a lot of different bearings and part numbers also for the industrial side. Mm-hmm. So we do make some in the US, in California. We make the races here. The balls are all made at very large factories that all they make are balls. Huh. Everybody buys balls from major factories. We buy them from Toshiba, Panasonic. Steel balls are forged. They start out as wire and they come out of machines and they're being forged at a real high rate of speed. And then they're ground into the into their tolerance, round tolerance.
Okay.
And ceramic balls are formed with heat and pressure and then ground. So they're a little different. They're made in a different way. But the races are all turned and then ground. And sometimes they start out as solid rod, which with our XD15, we can't get that in forgings or tubing. So it starts out as rod and you have to machine it. And that's another reason for its expense. And we do that in California or Singapore. And then stainless steel is usually tubing. And we also process that in Singapore and assembly and so forth there. And then bearing steel, when you can get up to good quantities on sizes, we forge the parts, which forging is always the best way to make things.
Okay.
So we can't forge every size, but popular sizes we can. And so seals come from Taiwan. Grease comes from the U.S. Most of our assembly is in Asia, either in Singapore, and then for max bearings, there's a lot of hand labor with assembling max bearings. They can't be assembled by machine. So those are assembled in Shanghai.
Wow.
So it's a lot of different places and a lot of different things coming together.
Yeah, that's interesting because it is such a small and seemingly simple part, but yeah, it's got a lot of pieces and a lot of hands are involved in putting those together, especially when it's a high quality product like that. So Enduro Bearings, you all make bearings, but also a lot of products that incorporate bearings, like bottom bracket, shells and pieces. So I want to ask you about press fit bottom brackets. Why do you think press fit bottom brackets have such a bad reputation among mountain bikers right now?
Well, all that noise, right? We've all experienced a press fit bottom bracket probably creaking if you've ridden enough.
Yeah.
I know I have. So, you know, press fit came about at the factories some years ago to get around because workers were cross-threading bottom brackets into the shells and wrecking these very expensive frames because they're going fast at the factory level, using pneumatic tools and so forth. So press fit came about to solve the assembly problem in factories. But
it wouldn't have been easier to just tell people how to install them, which way to turn the shell. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And well, I think they thought, and you know, I've heard all the stories, but I think they thought that since you press fit headset bearings in, why not do it with bottom bracket? But there's a lot of different forces on a bottom bracket. The human motion is pretty herky jerky, not very smooth into the putting the power into your bottom bracket, and that has an effect. And we hear the results, the noises, and so forth. So, you know, a lot of makers are going back to threaded bottom brackets again, of course, T47 and BSA is popular again. At that time, we made a version of a press fit bottom bracket that threads together. And now it's pretty popular with a lot of people, Torque-Tite, and where you go back to mechanically threading the thing together so it makes less noise. But I think, press fit in a bottom bracket, I'm not a fan myself because over time, as bearings wear a little bit and the parts wear, it's going to make noise. Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of when you're going to have to address it if you ride a lot.
Yeah. And I imagine too, for a lot of home mechanics, that requires another tool. I mean, unless you have a tool for pressing things into your frame like that. Yeah. A lot of us, we'd rather just screw something together.
Well, and then not only do we have press fit, but we have, you know, more than a dozen, maybe two dozen permutations of press fit. Mm. Maybe there's a dozen, but then when you add up Dub and Shimano and all the different spindles, you end up with a lot of bottom bracket types.
Right.
I think we have over 50 in stock, something like that.
Oh my goodness. Well, yeah. Do you see that becoming simpler over time? Like it is, you know, we've seen it with like derailleur hangers is something that there had been just countless versions of it. And we see SRAM saying, let's try to standardize this. Like, do you think that'll ever happen with bottom bracket sizes? Because it is really confusing.
Well, I think it seems like people are coming back around to BSA threaded shells again, okay. And especially in mountain bike, in the mountain bike world. And then T47 is gaining more and more popularity, both where you're threading the cups into the shell. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think people have gone away from, you know, some of the quote unquote standards that are around. But, you know, a lot of them like BB8692, it's a problematic bottom bracket shell, frankly, to address all the cranks that are in there. But, you know, it's hanging on. A lot of the big makers use them, and we have a couple of threaded solutions for those, but you can't do it on every solution.
Oh, yeah.
Some of them you just have to use a press fit setup. But I think to answer your question, yeah, I think it's coming back around. I don't think there's going to be any one solution, but there may be like, let's say, three or four that are acceptable solutions instead of 24.
Yeah.
Like there were a couple of years ago.
Yeah, that will be nice for sure. So aside from bottom brackets, to me, it seems like the bearings and pedals tend to give riders a lot of problems over time. Is that due to their placement as well, where they're like getting more into the mud and rain and stuff? Or is there something else going on there in terms of like the forces or the speeds that they're rotating at?
Well, there's a couple of things. One, you're right. They're right down in the dirt again. And the other thing is everybody wants the ball of their foot as close to the pedal spindle or the zero axis, if you will, as possible. Hmm. So you end up with the, let's say a 10, usually a 6-8 or 10 millimeter diameter spindle, 10 is big. And then you have to put a bearing on that. And a lot of times you're using, pedal makers will use a bushing instead of a pedal because it's lower profile,
right?
Or a needle bearing, which is very popular in pedals. Usually there's a ball bearing out towards the crank arm and a needle bearing out towards the end of the spindle.
Okay.
So it's kind of buried in your pedal. You may never see it because the only time it's hard to drag it out of there, it's deep inside. Yeah, it's challenged because you're asking a lot of the bearings that are on the pedal spindle. They're really small. They may only have a 50-pound capacity. So you may have to use four of them on the spindle in some pedal designs and you know, to support the load of the pedal and try and keep the ball of your foot as close to the zero axis as possible. Because they've proven that as your foot is closer to the center of the pedal spindle, you're more efficient in your biomechanics.
Yeah.
So the goal is to do that, but you're going up against smaller and smaller bearings. So you can put the bearing outside close to the crank spindle, but then it's getting cantilevered. There's a lot of unbalanced loads on the bearings out there. And so that wears it out too. So you're right. It's pedals are a big challenge for getting a bearing system that is smooth and spins well and takes the load and gets your foot down.
For sure. And in mountain biking too, you know, especially if we look at flat pedals, a lot of those, you know, they're trying to make the pedal itself thinner and thinner. And so that speaks to sort of what you're saying. You can't fit bearing really at some point you can't other than like needle bearings, can't fit that into the spindle. And then also, I am curious about mountain bikers on flat pedals, because a lot of them prefer to have like kind of the center of their foot or like their arch over the spindle. Does that make it easier or harder in terms of like balancing those loads? Or does it matter? Because it's still the majority of your weight is going to be there. It's just a different part of your foot.
Yeah, that doesn't change it too much, because if the pedal cage or pedal assembly over the axle, the load will get dispersed evenly down to the pedal spindle, no matter where the ball of your foot is. It's still weight coming down straight on that thing. If the, you know, it depends on the placement of the bearings. If the bearings are completely inboard and it's an imbalanced load, that mm-hmm. will become a problem. If they're spaced out and they go all the way out to the end of your foot, you know, there's something out there to like carry weight out at the end. Mm-hmm. It's probably a balanced load. It's going to work better. The other part of what you were saying too is, you know, you have a lot of seals. You'll see a lot of those flat pedals don't spin very well, or sometimes they don't. They're in the wrong position when you go to put your foot back on them. Mm-hmm. And it's because there's a lot of seals on there to keep the dirt out. And the seals, it's not the bearing that's holding the pedal back. It'll be the seals that are giving you that, you know, stiction. So it doesn't level out. The pedal doesn't level out easily.
Right, right. So tell us, what's next for enduro bearings? Is there potential for innovation and improvement in bicycle bearings, or are we kind of at the edge of what they're capable of doing?
No, we have a new design of what we call Max Hit, and to your pointer, what we were discussing earlier of creaking bottom brackets. We usually on a bottom bracket you have an aluminum cup with a bearing that's pressed into it, or that's how everybody's is made. There's probably 50 or more of those out there like that. So we are making the outer race is the bearing cup. It's basically a threaded bearing.
Okay.
And we're able to do that because we're a bearing company. So what does that do? Well, it eliminates the aluminum cup to steel bearing interface. Mm. So the possibility of creaking is gone there. And then we're able to use bigger balls in the bottom bracket itself. Hmm. So they roll better, they last longer, they roll with less friction. If everything's not straight, it accounts for misalignment better. So we're very excited about that. The Max Hit, they're basically threaded bearings. And the next one that we're coming out with is T47, which we've been working on for, well, frankly, all this year. So the hard part about it is getting all the tooling and fixturing to make it at the factory just right. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of work. There's been a lot of work to make these, but it's been really fun and cool for me because when we've finished them, they work better than we thought they were going to. Mm. They're really efficient. In our we test them on our machines. Of course, we're doing field testing too. We got a lot of them out there, but the T47 Max Hits, I'm pretty excited about those. Hmm. You know, bearings are funny because you don't see them. You don't think about, you only think about them when you have a problem.
Right.
Usually. Right. It's but you're suspended on them. They're really important. Everything you do on a bike, there's a bearing between you and the road, whether you're suspended on headset bearings, bottom bracket bearings, the whole thing is, it's like your tires. You're on tires. You're on bearings too.
Yeah.
So they are pretty important. But I'm excited about this one. I think it's kind of a fun thing. And then, you know, as you said, all the different standards we have to address each. We're just doing BSA and T47 so far, and we have two headsets out now.
Okay.
With the same design, the Max Hit design.
Okay. Cool. Well, are there opportunities too in bikes similar to how you got your start, where bikes are using a bushing, where maybe we could use bearings and it would be more effective, or are bearings pretty much everywhere they're going to be on a bike?
You know, most people still use bushings there's a lot of bushings in pedals because of the clearance problems.
Yeah.
And I have some ideas there that could work out better, I think, with bearings. But for the most part, there's bearings everywhere in bikes, and there's not very many makers. There's a few suspension makers that use bushings in different places instead of ball bearings. My experience tells me and shows me that bearings move faster. Mm-hmm. They always improve the suspension. Point. For instance, shock mounts always have bushings on them. And now some of them have moved to bearings for the shock mounts. It's a big difference when you set up your shock, when you move from a bushing to a bearing. It moves faster. And the performance of especially high frequency bumps and so forth, is immediately improved. And we made 20 years ago needle bearing replacements for shock mounts. And we didn't even talk about it, but we didn't promote it or anything or market it. And we sold so many, and the people who were, the feedback from the people who are racing bikes and riding them said, man, it's just night and day with needle bearings and the shock mounts compared to bushings.
Yeah. Interesting.
So even at that point, which is, you know, usually have a rocker assembly and then the shock is far away in the system, you wouldn't think it would have that much of a performance advantage, but it does.
Yeah, that's super interesting. I feel like a lot of people listening are, they're going to go check their bike right now and see what they've got on their shock mounts. Be like, maybe I should upgrade this. So that's great. Well, Matt, yeah, thanks so much for talking to us about your company and also how bearings work. I learned a ton, and hopefully our listeners have as well. So thank you.
Thanks a lot, Jeff. It's a pleasure.
Well, we'll have a link to the Enduro Bearings website in the show notes if you want to get more information. That's all we've got this week. We'll talk to you again next week.